Jhené Angola Jr., the podcast.
Jhené Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson filling in with us all week here. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll talk to Adam Rittenberg, our ESPN college football writer, in about a half hour here as we roll along towards week one. We had week zero last week, which, I don't know, quite frankly, already gave us a lot of gifts. I mean, Nebraska and Scott Frost losing in week one to now Brett Bielema's Illinois is just artistry on a different level. But we get week one, and we have that Big Ten to contend with, so we'll have Adam on to break that down in just a little bit. But, Amber, it seems like you and I are just destined to talk about Cam Newton forever, in perpetuity.
For the rest of our lives, that's what it seems like. Cam Newton. I don't know what we're going to do now without the Cam Newton, Mac Jones saga, but I'm guessing wherever Cam ends up, there will be some saga at quarterback. So don't you worry, Mike. This ain't the end of the road for our Cam Newton coverage.
Oh, never going to be the end of the road, because you're right. Eventually, someone is going to pick him up. But the Patriots were breaking moves today by releasing Cam Newton and naming Mac Jones the starter.
Breaking Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports.
And Amber, I know you were in the camp that this was Cam Newton's job, that you believed he was going to be in the starter. So what do you think ultimately went wrong in this situation? What got us here?
I don't know. I mean, we discussed it earlier in the show. It does seem like the unvaccinated status of Cam Newton had more to do with this than maybe we would have initially thought. And certainly Jim McBride, when we had him on earlier in the show from the Boston Globe, alluded to that, saying that that actually made a difference here. And it was a real consideration for this New England Patriots team. Jim said that the plan was, or at least he thinks the plan was, to have Cam start at the beginning of the season. And then that changed. When Mac played very well throughout the season, we've heard reports coming out of Boston that he also impressed the staff there in other ways, in terms of how he was in meetings and how he conducted himself behind the scenes and sort of the leadership role that he took on as a rookie. And then also you have this component of the story where Cam Newton, because he's unvaccinated, is in a different set of protocols, and we saw those go awry already in the preseason, where he missed time that we didn't expect that he'd miss because he got a COVID test at the wrong place, at the wrong facility, and he is under the protocols where he has to get tested every single day, so that matters. Whereas if he was vaccinated, that would not have occurred. And so maybe there's a concern there that, hey, we're taking a risk by having an unvaccinated quarterback under center, whether he is a starter or whether he's a backup. So maybe that does play into this. I think ultimately what it comes down to, though, is that these quarterbacks, I was impressed with Cam Newton in the preseason, and so I am surprised by this move. Obviously, everybody was impressed by Mac Jones as well in the preseason, and so I think that's really what this comes down to, is that neither quarterback really separated themselves, and if you don't really separate yourself, then why not go with the young guy on the rook contract who is set up to be the future of your organization in a way that Cam Newton is just not?
Yeah, tie goes to youth in this spot if you're not going to wow. I brought this up to you earlier, but my senior year at Notre Dame, I was struggling through the first few games, and my O-line coach sat me down before we played Michigan and said, listen, I can have a freshman come in and make the same mistakes you are and get the added bonus of developing him for the future. And so you've got to have these things in mind. There's an extra burden when it's close and you've got young, highly drafted talent behind you. Now, why else might this have been a reason? Mike Reese, our ESPN Patriots reporter, joined Greeny on ESPN Radio earlier today and talked about one of the other difficulties, potentially, of keeping Cam Newton around this team.
Cam is, you know, he was a captain last year, and he obviously has the alpha presence. And so when you watch a Patriots practice or even a game, you know, Cam's the one that's calling the players on offense up, you know, like, hey, let's come together, let's get fired up for the game. He's on the sideline, he's the one, you know, pacing up and down, trying to get everyone up. If you keep him on the team in a backup role, like, how does that mix work? And to me, that's how I view that situation. It's, you almost want to clear the path for Mac so he can grow and players can respond to him, right? It might be hard to do that with Cam looking over your shoulders.
Jhené Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And Amber, I would also flip that around in Cam's favor going forward, because I think everyone has come away from the Cam Newton in New England experience with even more respect for a guy that we knew was an incredible player and saw in his own way was an incredible leader in Carolina. But the way he navigated this change, the way he navigated last season, the way he came in after the guy left, like Tom Brady was just fresh out the door and Cam Newton was the guy after the guy, and all he did was go in there, earn the respect of one of the toughest locker rooms in sports and one of the most renowned head coaches in sports. I have a feeling that whether it's as a potential starter in a spot or as now a highly coveted backup, Cam Newton's going to have a lot of people knocking down his door.
You want vet leadership in your locker room, but I think the New England Patriots feel like they have it beyond the quarterback position this season, and they have a lot of those veterans back that they were so desperately missing last season from the opt-outs. So maybe they felt like, hey, we don't necessarily need Cam's leadership in that regard. And Cam Newton, he doesn't just bring a veteran leadership, but he brings a particularly big personality. I mean, you heard it referenced right there, like he is the alpha male in the locker room. He's always had that personality. I remember when he was at the University of Florida, and he was a freshman, so he wasn't even playing at the University of Florida. I mean, people probably forget that he was under Urban Meyer at the University of Florida before going and winning a national championship with Auburn. And I remember being at a Gators game, and I was sitting really close to the team, and I was with a friend who happened to be wearing an LSU jersey because that's where he had gone. And Cam Newton turned around and was heckling my friend. I mean, just ripping him one relentlessly. And it was hilarious because I'm a Gators fan and I loved every minute of it. But he had that huge personality, that kind of look at me personality back then when he hadn't even accomplished anything yet in football. And now we know everything that he's accomplished. So I can only imagine now what it's like inside a locker room. That's all the credit to Cam. That works really well in certain locker rooms. Maybe they were just concerned here that it wouldn't work so well in a backup type situation with a rookie quarterback at the helm. I do think if you had Cam sitting behind Mac, the problem is that you would have a conversation with every mistake Mac Jones makes throughout the season. When are we putting in Cam Newton? When are we going to see Cam Newton? And that's not a conversation that the New England Patriots necessarily want to have all season long while they're trying to move on to their future and gain confidence in Mac Jones.
And confidence in Mac Jones is what a lot of people already have. We talked to Dan Orlovsky about this earlier, who's been high on that Mac Jones for a while here. Booger McFarland, though, one of our great ESPN NFL analysts, said top four in the AFC is what this team can be with Mac.
If Mac Jones stays healthy, which is always a big if in this contact sport, they will challenge the Buffalo Bills in the AFC East, which gives them an opportunity to challenge whoever comes out of the other division. They will be a top four team in the AFC. And I don't think anyone would have ever said that in the middle of the season last year when we were all having these conversations on talk radio about the demise of the Patriots. How soon have we forgotten that Bill Belichick has put a team together led by a rookie quarterback that if he stays healthy, they are a top four team in the entire AFC this season.
Top four team in the AFC, Amber, we buy
Why?
This?
I don't get it. Dan Orlovsky said the same thing when he was on with us a few minutes ago. I do not understand how they are a top four team in the conference when we have no idea what Mac Jones looks like in games that count and against the ones. Like maybe they're right, and maybe Mac Jones ends up being that. I just don't know how you have the confidence yet in that position where you feel like the Patriots, coming off the season they had last season, and again, I'm one who thinks that they are going to be much improved this season, but I am not ready with a quarterback who I saw in three preseason games, who, by the way, didn't really outplay Cam either. I'm not really confident in saying that they're going to be a top four team in that conference. I find that a leap.
Yeah, Amber, I would say that this just goes back to I thought they built this team to basically stay afloat no matter which of these guys was at quarterback. That when you've got the kind of line that they do, I mean, hell, we've seen good offensive lines in the NFL buoy far lesser quarterbacks than either of these two guys. And when you combine that with a defense that you look up overnight, and it's the boogeymen that were giving Sam Darnold nightmares from years ago back in that linebacker core, it's starting to all feel familiar. And I understand everyone wants to make body type comparisons with Tom Brady, but this really feels a lot more akin to when you got early Tom Brady over here, meaning this is not going to be a Patriots team that necessarily asks its quarterback to go out there and will them to victory.
Okay, in that regard, fine. I am just, like, my soul is curdling here as we keep making the Mac Jones, Tom Brady comparisons, or if we keep talking about how familiar this feels, because goodness, familiar. Like, we are comparing him to the greatest quarterback who has ever done it. Like, what are we doing? Are we setting the bar that high for Mac Jones? Listen, my bar for Mac Jones is go out and have a good rookie season. No rookie has ever gone to a Super Bowl. No rookie has ever won a Super Bowl. That would mean to me the New England Patriots are probably not Super Bowl contenders anymore. That's not a knock on Mac Jones. That's just the reality of the situation in the NFL.
I don't think they were Super Bowl contenders with Cam Newton at quarterback either, to be clear. I would say the comparison with Brady largely exists because they both have tummies. Like, that's the difference
I think
here.
That is it. Like, I think honestly, it's a body comparison.
It is. Oh, it is 100%
Football,
Tom Brady's combine.
The one place that we can still body shame in 2021.
No, listen,
safe space.
We're not even body shaming. We're celebrating guys with a little extra love. That's all that is. This can be a celebration of different body types being able to succeed basically only at quarterback. That basically seems like the last spot that you can really do this. But coming up next, there are certainly moves like this with Cam that surprised us. But there were also moves today based on injury that sent shockwaves through the NFL. The biggest impact we'll see on this upcoming NFL season and the most shocking roster move made today. Next on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Commercial insurance through Progressive protects your business and your dream. Choose from over 30 coverage options at progressivecommercial.com. It's Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson, hanging out with us all this week. And Amber, we've talked so much about a lot of the moves made today in the NFL. We've seen Cam Newton released by the New England Patriots, certainly shocked a lot of people, Brian Hoyer and some others. But Amber, how about this one? Adam Schefter, our ESPN NFL insider, tweeted around the start of the show today at 4 o'clock, the Detroit Lions have released both of their kickers in Randy Bullock and Zane Gonzalez, leaving them without one currently. Amber, are the Detroit Lions trying to basically become the football version of the movie Speed, just go no brakes on this thing until it explodes?
I saw a tweet that Man Campbell is just going to go punch the ball through the uprights, and that's how they're going to handle this. It does feel like that's the direction that we're headed. Yes, I don't know what to make of this situation, although I have been surprised today that the New England Patriots have also cut multiple quarterbacks, given Orlovsky told us earlier that he thinks Hoyer will get re-signed by them. So is this the same situation then with the kicking room? Like, it's some sort of cap like toggling here where you're cutting a kicker and then you're going to re-sign a kicker? I wouldn't think that the cap hit on these kickers is large enough for them to be messing around with that, but maybe, because that is what Dan Orlovsky said was probably happening with Hoyer with the Patriots.
Yeah, there's a lot of funny money that goes on with being on the opening day roster and these weird things where teams can save money here, but I'm going to just choose to bathe in the idea that Dan Campbell's not kicking this year. Do the punters next. I don't want to see anyone lose their job, but I do want to see a team go all in on never punting, never kicking, and legitimately going all gas and not even having breaks on the roster here. So we've got that from Man Campbell, but we've also got a lot of injury news around the NFL, Amber. I want to give you three stories here. There is New Orleans Saints wide receiver Michael Thomas, who had that offseason foot surgery later than his head coach wanted, is now starting the season on the PUP list, meaning he will not be eligible to be on the field for the Saints until week 7. The same goes for David Bakhtiari, left tackle for the Green Bay Packers, who dealt with an ACL injury last year, also starting on the PUP list, also won't be available till week 7. And then the late add to this, Trey Lance, 49ers quarterback, has a small chip in one of his fingers there, basically in the next step above jamming it. Hopefully it'll be available in a week. But Amber, when you look at those three spots, which of those injuries do you think has the biggest impact on the upcoming season?
Well, I'm not worried about Trey Lance's injury because, like you said, they'll reevaluate in a week. It's a chipped finger. I mean, it doesn't sound like a good time, but it doesn't sound like something that's really going to prohibit you from playing football throughout the regular season. And I don't think he's the starting quarterback there anyways. I mean, I think it's Jimmy Garoppolo, and then you're using Trey Lance packages, and obviously Trey Lance has a particular skill set. I don't think that this injury in any way changes the landscape there in San Francisco. Michael Thomas, other than the fact that you heard the coach lament the fact that he did not get the surgery sooner, and this is why, because now he's on the PUP list, now he's going to miss at least 6 weeks. But in terms of the expectation of this coming, I mean, I think we all knew when he went through that offseason foot injury that he was not going to be ready at the start of this regular season. I don't know what that Saints team is going to look like. I know people are higher on that team now after a Jameis preseason than maybe they expected to be. I believe Mina Kimes told us that yesterday. But overall, I don't think you're thinking that that Saints team is in a position to win a championship with or without Michael Thomas. On the other hand, the Green Bay Packers are. And so Bakhtiari's injury, to me, is by far the most impactful of these three. I mean, you're talking about the guy tasked with being the protector of Aaron Rodgers' blind side. And without him, and with some of the other issues that they've been dealing with, I mean, you might end up with multiple rookies on that O-line in Green Bay, and you're talking about arguably the best O-line last year in the NFL. But after that Bakhtiari injury, it was immediate with that pass block win rate. When you pull the numbers before his injury throughout the regular season, and then after that, when you get to the NFC Championship game, it was a market decline in the play of that O-line. Obviously, that O-line is important. I mean, protecting any quarterback in the National Football League is important, maybe particularly when you're protecting an MVP and one who's in his late 30s. Most importantly, though, the Packers are trying to win a Super Bowl now, and now they're not going to have one of their most important players for 7 weeks, it might be. So I would say that Bakhtiari's injury is the most concerning to me by far.
Yeah, Amber, I would agree if it weren't for the otherworldly confidence I have in Packers' second-round pick from 2019, Elgton Jenkins. He became, last season, the first Packers offensive lineman since 1970, since the merger, to start a game at center, guard, and tackle, and start them well. When he's been out here, he slid out to left tackle during camp and by all accounts has been rock solid. And so I look at who you've got waiting in the wings. They've got Royce Newman on that roster, who I think can slide in, that they've really liked out of their draft this year. But I look at that Saints squad and I say, all right, talent-wise, I think there's a lot on that roster. But I know when we talked about Marquez Callaway and what he did in the preseason with Jameis Winston, that's great. But you're still dealing with turnover at quarterback and losing your by far best receiving option on a group that has not been overly deep throughout the last few years, who's had to supplement that by bringing over some aging veterans on that roster to get things going. So I have worries about the Saints, Amber, just because I think there's probably a higher ceiling for that group than we give them credit for with the addition of that downfield passing game. But if you remove Michael Thomas for weeks on end in a division where you're going to have to go toe-to-toe with the defending champs who brought everyone back, that scares the hell out of me.
You would feel much more confident in the opportunity for success for Jameis if, of course, Michael Thomas was available. So I agree with you there. And you know, obviously, a lot more O-line than I do. And it's one of those positions in football that from the outside looking in, if you've never played it, you don't really know what the heck is going on with the technique and all of that. You're right, Jenkins is their most flexible lineman, and that's why he gets tasked with stepping up in Bakhtiari's absence. But it just concerns me, again, when you mentioned the fourth rounder this year that's going to be probably playing on that line. Like, when you're talking about those sorts of moves, considering how good that Packers line was last season and the fact that they are trying to win a Super Bowl, I don't think the Saints are in the same situation in terms of trying to win a Super Bowl. This might be Aaron Rodgers' last season with the Packers. This might be their only opportunity. You don't want any major injuries on your line or otherwise during a season like that.
No, you're right. I know we're not supposed to treat this like the Last Dance, even though the quarterback and the wide receiver put up the Last Dance memes and all of this, but I'm just saying it kind of feels like it could be the Last Dance, and you'd want all of your best pieces out there for it. Coming up next, though, let's look at the world of college football and figure out if this could be the Last Dance for a couple of the coaches inside the Big Ten here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson. Coming up in about 10 minutes, comments from two NFL coaches that you're going to want to hear around some moves made and not made around cut day here in the NFL. But before we head back to the NFL, let's stick around college. We're heading up to week one this year. We did yesterday the Big 12 conference preview. We want to give you a preview of the Power Five, the Group of Five, some great conferences as we head toward the first weekend of college football. And to help us preview the Big Ten, we head to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to our friend and ESPN college football writer Adam Rittenberg, who joins us now. And Adam, we appreciate you giving us some time. If we're going to talk about the Big Ten, it feels only right to start with Ohio State. C.J. Stroud, the new face in that very, very loaded quarterback room, going to be under center. But is it the same story and a different year for Ohio State, having it be their Big Ten to lose?
Yeah, I think just looking at the history, they are certainly the team to beat in the conference. And even the recent history at quarterback, even though it's a new player, you look at what Coach Ryan Day, offensive coordinator Kevin Wilson, have done since they arrived. All it's been is records and first-round picks out of that position, pretty much. And so C.J. Stroud is a little bit of a mystery, has a tough opening assignment against Minnesota, which would be an approved team on the road. But you look at the wealth of talent around him. I don't know if there's a deeper receiving core in the country than Ohio State. They should also be really good on the offensive line, tight end, you know, a little bit of new blood at running back. And so, you know, my questions with Ohio State are more on the defensive side. You know, they got exposed a little bit in the national title game and, you know, some new faces at linebacker. So that's where they could be held up a little bit, but certainly will enter the season as a team to beat in the conference.
Adam, Michigan has a revamped staff. So how hot is Harbaugh's seat right now?
Right, Amber. Usually when you have that revamped staff, it's like a precursor to either the coach turns it around or he gets fired. And Michigan did rework Jim's contract after the 2020 season to make it a lot easier for them to part ways. But there's also a new energy in the program. I think when they brought in some of the new assistants, a lot of younger guys, especially on the defensive side of the ball, Mike McDonald coming over from the Ravens is a new coordinator, still in his kind of early to mid-30s. And so interested to see what they do. It's supposed to be a pretty different-looking scheme on defense, and that's going to be a critical area because they had been so good under Don Brown for a while in the last few years, you know, kind of struggled defensively. And then with Michigan, it's about quarterback, right? And this is the spot we all thought Jim Harbaugh would have really running at this point, and it hasn't been that case. And they have a lot of confidence in Cade McNamara. He played a little bit last year, started a game. But he entered the preseason camp as the starter and exited with that same QB1 designation. And so, you know, Harbaugh has yet to have that, you know, superstar elite quarterback since he got to Michigan, and McNamara will have the chance to do that. And they're going to have to start out really well at home. They didn't win a home game last year in that abbreviated season, but they start out with several key home games, including week 2 against Washington, get some confidence, and then they go on the road October 2nd to Wisconsin, a team that's absolutely obliterated them the last two seasons. So we're going to learn a lot about Michigan in those first 4 or 5 games.
Janaan Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson talking to Adam Rittenberg, our ESPN college football writer, about Big Ten football heading into the upcoming season. Adam, when you look around the conference, certainly last year presented a lot of challenges, and the records kind of reflected that. You saw down years really across the board from Wisconsin, from teams like Penn State, Michigan, Minnesota. When you look at that grouping of teams that finished 500 or lower, who do you think is primed for the biggest bounce back this upcoming season?
Well, I think Penn State has a real opportunity, and it's interesting because they play Wisconsin on the road to begin the year in that opening game. But, you know, 0-5, you're not going to see that out of Penn State to start the year again. I like their talent level. I think quarterback-wise, if Sean Clifford can start looking more like the guy we saw a couple of years ago with a new play caller again in Mike Yurcich, I think they have a chance to be dynamic on that side. They have a really deep group at running back. They have an exciting group at receiver led by Jahan Dotson. I think their offensive line is going to be solid. So, you know, Penn State, to me, talent-wise, has been the closest to Ohio State on a consistent basis, even though they haven't always beaten the Buckeyes. And then on the, you know, in the West, I think Wisconsin, you know, has that opportunity to bounce back. I mean, it's never been 2 years. They've never gone 2 years without making the Big Ten championship game since it started in 2011. You know they're going to be one of the best defenses in the country. They always are under Jim Leonard, their coordinator. And then offensively, you know, this is Graham Mertz's time to shine. He was the highest-rated quarterback recruit in team history. He started strong last year, then got COVID and didn't really perform at the level that he expects to. And so I think there's going to be more on his shoulders without maybe an established lead running back. They're going to have to throw the ball at a high level to complement that defense. So you got to start with Penn State and Wisconsin certainly having a chance to bounce back, and they obviously meet this weekend in Madison.
Those teams disappointed us last season. Indiana surprised us last season. Could they surprise us again this season?
They absolutely could, Amber, although they're going to have to start off strong. You know, they get Iowa in their opener on the road, and then they get Cincinnati, a top 10 team, coming into Bloomington in week three. But they are set up. Their roster looks outstanding. They bring back a lot of their key players from last year. They added some transfers on both sides of the ball. And the biggest thing to watch for Indiana is whether Michael Penix Jr. can stay healthy. When he's been out there, their offense has been electric. They went toe-to-toe for the most part with Ohio State last year in Columbus. But the problem for Michael is he never finished the season healthy. And talking recently with Indiana coach Tom Allen, there's just such a hope that he can get through the season clean and play at a high level, because he really makes them a different team, and they've recruited and developed so well. It's just whether they can kind of sustain this in that East Division, plus having an Iowa as a crossover game, plus having Cincinnati non-conference. So it is a very, very tough schedule overall for IU.
Adam, before we let you go, it's not necessarily a preview for them, since we've seen Nebraska football on the field for a game already in a loss in the opener on the road at Illinois here. How much longer are we going to be celebrating Scott Frost Day in Nebraska if they keep this up?
Well, not much longer, Mike, although I think they want to give him every opportunity to succeed. I think one of the biggest problems Nebraska's had since they came into the Big Ten is lack of stability in the leadership positions, whether it's head coach or athletic director. And Trev Alberts is the new AD, also like Scott Frost, a former Husker great. And they don't want to make a change, but the problem is, and you saw it against Illinois, the movie looked very similar with mistakes, special teams problems, turnover, key turnover, some really costly penalties. So, I wrote about it on ESPN.com. They have to try to change their DNA and try to become something different, because in that division, it's not about having the most talent. It's about who can play the cleanest. And that's why Wisconsin wins. That's why Iowa and Northwestern wins. And it's why Nebraska hasn't won so far under Scott Frost. So he's going to have to start changing that. Their schedule also very difficult with an Ohio State crossover, and certainly teams in the West that should really challenge them this year.
Awesome stuff. Everyone, check out at ESPN Rittenberg on Twitter. You can read him on ESPN.com and ESPN Plus. Adam, we appreciate the time, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, guys. Appreciate you.
An awesome look at the Big Ten from Adam Rittenberg. But coming up next, we will give you the words we have been waiting to hear from one NFL coach about his starting quarterback. Next on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Amber, keeping that same energy, Jeff Darlington, our ESPN NFL insider, tweeted out, "I'm told Dolphins coach Brian Flores just addressed his team regarding recent reports tying Miami to a possible trade for Deshaun Watson. Sources say he told players and staff that Tua Tagovailoa is, quote, our quarterback, in a brief but poignant endorsement of the QB. Amber, these are kind of the words we've been waiting to hear publicly for a while. It's interesting if we will hear them now from Brian Flores, knowing all the conversation that swirled about this team.
Well, this is private, right? This is a private conversation that he has with his team. Jeff Darlington does go on to say this information is not intended to dispute recent reports that Miami was a major player in trade discussions. It's just a reflection of the moment. And he goes on to say wherever it started and wherever it's going. And it's an indication that we still don't really know where it's going, right, with that situation with Deshaun Watson in the Miami Dolphins. I can tell you that they have been linked in rumors with Deshaun Watson for a very long time, and that predates the off-the-field issues with the 22 lawsuits and the criminal investigations and the heinous allegations and everything going on there with Deshaun Watson. That predates all of that. In part because, from what I understand and what's still being reported out there in the rumor mill, is that Deshaun Watson, who has a no trade clause, is willing to waive it potentially for Miami and not necessarily for many other teams in the NFL. It seems to be a destination that he would be interested in. So that's one of the reasons that I think the Dolphins continuously get linked to Deshaun Watson, in addition to the fact that the Dolphins do have a question mark at quarterback, just because we don't know what you have in Tua Tagovailoa.
Well, let's keep that same energy and stay with head coaches in the NFL in the state of Florida. Jacksonville Jaguars head coach Urban Meyer said he and GM Trent Baalke took players' vaccination status into consideration during final roster cuts. Meyer said on Tuesday that it was considered because of the more stringent protocols. He said, quote, everyone was considered, and that was part of the consideration, such as production. Let's start talking about this, and also, is he vaccinated or not? Can I say that was a decision maker? It certainly was. It was certainly in consideration. And Amber, I think Urban Meyer here, I don't know if this is going to cause blowback from the Players Association or what, but he seemed to just say the quiet thing out loud that we already knew.
Yeah, Urban Meyer with the transparency. But the thing that is, I'm sure, happening all across the NFL and certainly isn't exclusive to him or his staff. Can you, I mean, like, are you surprised, Mike? Because when we're talking about guys on the bubble, which is what we're talking about here, then I think you take everything into consideration when you're making roster cuts. And I'm not surprised that they would consider a vaccination status in a season where unvaccinated players getting COVID and causing a breakout can cost you regular season games. So there's that, in addition to the fact that they might not be available because of all the extra protocols they have to go through. So this doesn't surprise me.
Nope. It's what we've been saying since the beginning. It's what we said could have played a factor, and we've heard from some did in Cam Newton's release today, so I don't know why anyone's going to act shocked when he says the obvious thing out loud. Keeping that same energy here on Chené and Golic Jr., this is an interesting one. South Carolina, in their opener on Saturday against Eastern Illinois, is going to trot out their former graduate assistant. Zeb Nolan, who joined the team as a grad assistant on Shane Beamer's coaching staff, was the former quarterback last year at North Dakota State. He played his final game against what he thought was Sam Houston State in the FCS quarterfinals before joining the staff. Luke Dottie, who was supposed to be the starter, injured his left foot in preseason. And Zed Nolan split rep with the now backup and is going to get the start week one. How confident should Gamecocks fans feel going into the new era, Amber?
From North Dakota State to the SEC, the glow-up is real. The old GA under center move. Who can game plan for that, Mike? Maybe brilliant. I don't know what's happening here or why they're thin at that position. Like, why are you so thin at the quarterback position? It seems like the one position on the field you don't want to be thin at.
You know what? I can say this. I'm sure Nick Saban is now ticked he didn't think of this loophole. So expect that in coming years. One quarterback room that's not thin at the position or in the wallet is Ohio State. Ohio State quarterback Quinn Ewers, the player who forwent his last year of high school eligibility at South Lake Carrollton, Texas, because they wouldn't let him profit off his NIL, just signed a $1.4 million deal over 3 years with GT Sports Marketing in exchange for autographs. Amber, I'm going to need a minute to dry heave. This is incredible.
Think he might have made the right decision.
Yeah. You know, right. Senior prom.
Feels like senior prom, 1.4 milli. I think I'm opting for the 1.4 milli. This is the sort of NIL deal that we expected day one of NIL. And it took us a while to get here. It's taken a couple months, but now we are seeing these monster deals that change the lives of these college athletes, whether they end up playing a down in the NFL or not. He will have made his money in college.
And just like that, folks, Texas is not back here. What are they doing with that law? Texas, Illinois, and Mississippi just shooting themselves in the foot at this point here. Hero at the bank, Quinn Ewers, is going to be walking extra tall into the Ohio State quarterback meeting room as they get ready for week one. We'll see if Jason Fitz can walk tall onto ESPN Radio next on Spain and Fitz.
Thanks for listening to Chené and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.